ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
Well, would you looky here? It's a late Christmas miracle. In fact, I'd call it a Christmas present. It's Maddie and Herbie back at you, College Football Podcast. Kirk, Merry Christmas, man. Good catching up with you again.
Great catching up with you, buddy. Happy holidays. Hope Christmas went well with you and your family. And now it's that time between Christmas and New Year's Day and bowl games for guys like you and I. I know that some people are focusing on the games that are going to be canceled, but there's still so many games that we have coming up to look forward to. And really, the Power Five conferences, not that that's the only conferences that matter, obviously, but a lot of those teams are still, at least their games at this point, are still intact, and a lot of games to look forward to.
Yeah, busy week with the college football bowls. You had mentioned some of them being canceled, which is a shame. COVID's still very much a part of the sport. I think you and I speak for everyone when we're kind of sitting here and we're crossing our fingers that these college football playoff teams and these New Year's Six teams get to their destinations, get to their sites, and then get into a bubble. Because the last thing we need for the good of the sport is to have a forfeiture in the playoff and just have a team waltz into the national championship game.
Yeah, that would not be good. But I think listening to the coaches from these schools, everybody's now on location. And, I think listening to some of them, they're going to allow these players to go out and do different things, different activities, being cautious and being smart. I have a son that plays at Clemson and Ohio State. And I know they're not the semifinal games, but, there's the Lowry Beef Bowl at the Rose Bowl, and there's a day at, I think, Universal or at Disney that they're going to go to. And my son Ty's been in Orlando, for a few days and getting pictures every day. And they're out there amongst Iowa State players at parks and things. So, I know that this latest variant is incredibly contagious, but if you're vaccinated, which almost all these players are, most of them even have boosters.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be in good shape.
Yeah. I don't want to dive too far into the realm of COVID and all that. Cause we are the furthest thing from scientists that there are, but this is, because we talk about the sport, we're you're the ambassador for the sport. And I think at this point we've seen the NFL do it. I mean, altering protocol a little bit, perhaps some of these kids that are asymptomatic. I think it at some point, maybe not, it's not going to happen now because we're too far down, but maybe at some point this needs to be discussed in the offseason. Because far be it for me to predict what's going to happen, but I don't think this is going anywhere. And we can't have protocol that in this point is 18 months archaic based on how this thing started relative to where it is today.
Yeah. I think I've heard a lot of people speak on that. And I'm like you, I'm not a scientist, not a doctor. I just listen. I'm not into politics. I don't follow politics. I have four sons. I have my wife, my mom, who's 82, my sister, her family. And my recommendation is I do what they say. If you disagree with that, that's fine. But it's incredible when you just, it gives you peace of mind. It's not going to prevent you from getting the virus. It's like trying to prevent yourself from getting the flu or the cold. You still might get it, but based on the numbers and all the information and the intel, it's a much better chance of not going to the hospital or not getting really, really, really sick if you have the vaccination and also even the booster. So I think most of the, I don't sit here as a dad with two sons that are playing, one at Ohio State, one at Clemson, like, oh my God, I just hope they're being careful. I don't live like that. Get the vaccine and go live. Yeah. Go live. That's the whole point. And my family, not politics, my family, is the whole reason I got a booster last week. So I can avoid the potential of whatever else might be coming up, contact tracing or anything else. Hey man, here's my card. We got my card right here. I'm ready to show that anywhere.
Look,
I got
that.
Show that. I'm ready. I got the third line now.
Is that laminated? Why does that look so?
My wife laminates it. We're official.
What a project.
Yeah. It's a project. That's the new world that we live in. But again, I'm not into politics. I like to not wear a mask. I like to not go to the hospital if I get it. Now, keep in mind, I got it. almost a year ago to the day. Still can't smell 100%. I'm about a 5 or 6 on smell, 5 or 6 on taste. So I don't have my head in the ground saying this thing is it's overrated. I get it. I mean, I'm living it for 12 months.
Right.
I didn't die. I went to the hospital, but taking away 2 of your 5 senses for an entire year is very strange and very real. So I get it. But that's why I'm all about, they tell me to get a vaccine, no problem. I'll get the vaccine. And I think, like I said, these players are doing that. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The vaccine is not to prevent them from getting it. It's to prevent them from getting very, very sick. And yet here we are with a lot of players who are asymptomatic. Have you heard a player who's been vaccinated that's really ill? Have you heard of any of that?
No, I haven't either. Because I've reached out to some of the coaches in some of these games and it's been canceled.
I haven't heard any of that. So, but anyway, like you said, I think it's a little bit of a moving target. Hopefully by the 2022 season, they'll update the protocols, because even from now, 8 months from now, when the season gets ready to start, there's going to be even more variants and more changes. And I just hope that that we adjust the protocol to give ourselves a chance of staying healthy, keep all these players healthy, these coaches, the staff. Everybody obviously needs to be healthy first and foremost. But then at the same time, there's the whole point in getting a vaccine and a booster is to take care of everybody. And what's the point in doing it if you're not going to get some kind of benefit from taking the booster and everything else that we're taking? So,
I'm with you. I had it in April and you and I were texting about it a while ago. I'm not fully back with taste and smell. Like, so
what are you, like a 5 or a 6
on the taste? I'm about a 7 on the smell. I'm about a 6 or a 7.
Okay.
And so, that sucks. Like
it does.
I like food. Like, I mean, I already put hot sauce on everything, but you should see what I do to food now. It's almost embarrassing what I do to get some semblance of flavor on the food. But here we are. It's the times we live in. We're testing in and out. I had to test in and out twice. I was doing GMA over the weekend and had to test in and out for that. New York City's got a whole thing going on. So we're still very much in it, but we are counting down to the college football playoff and they are on December 31st. Got the Cotton Bowl, the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic, Cincinnati, Alabama, then the Capital One Orange Bowl. Let's start in Dallas. We'll do this time friendly because that one starts at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Vegas says, Kirk, that it's going to be a blowout. Vegas has Alabama at 13.5 points. I don't know how much Vegas has watched Cincinnati's secondary. They've got 2 of the best corners in the country, maybe the best tandem in the country. They've got that attitude about them that we don't give a damn if you like us or not. Yeah. And for that reason only, I'll cage it with this. I think the first half of this game, people are going to realize that Cincinnati belongs on the same field with Alabama.
I think that's fair. I think that the thing you have to go back to, first of all, long layoffs. I think long layoffs are challenging for coaches because you have exams that are in there. You kind of give them a little bit of time away. You had the early signing period where the coaches aren't even around them. It's all hands on deck trying to sign a good class. So there's like a week and a half, 2 week period where, you're hanging out with the strength coach, working out, whether your season ended with a great win or whatever, however it ended. And that's kind of their reality. And all these teams ended the season in varying spots. Alabama had their best performance of the year against Georgia. Georgia had a disappointing loss and a bad taste in their mouth as they get ready for Michigan, who arguably over the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season was the hottest team with the most momentum of any team in the country. And you have Cincinnati, who's got a chip on their shoulder to try to prove that they belong with the big boys. So I think everybody's got a fun story coming into these games. But the long layoff is, I think, a little bit of a delicate balance. And you want your team to peak right at, whether it's 4 o'clock Eastern in Dallas or it's 8 o'clock, in Miami, depending on, the teams, you want them to peak emotionally, spiritually, and physically at the right time. And you got to be careful getting too rah-rah on December 23rd. You got to start rah-rahing them on like December 29th, December 30th, get into game mode where you're ready to get them to peak. So, because I've seen teams take the field and they're just not ready emotionally. But I'm with you. I think Cincinnati competes. I think Luke Fickell's in a great coach. I think he's got a great staff. Most importantly, he's got a veteran team who's been through a lot of good. And I think they believe in themselves. The most important thing, and I was over at Cincinnati's facility last week. I was talking to Luke and Desmond Ridder about this. I told Desmond, I said, you got to get your guys in pregame warmups. You look down across that 50, you see Nick Saban. There he is in real life. You've seen him since you were 10 years old in these games. And now there he is. And you've seen that Alabama uniform since you were 10. They're always in these games.
Right.
You can't lose the game. Not you, Desmond, but your team can't lose the game just by like bright lights, big stage. Oh my God, there's Alabama.
We're here.
And I'm not saying they're going to. I'm just saying I've seen teams do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get your mindset right. We belong. There's Nick Saban. There's Alabama. You know, let's go play. There's a Heisman Trophy winner. Let's go do this. You know, and I think because they're such a veteran group, I think they will do that. And I think playing Georgia last year and really outplaying Georgia in the Peach Bowl, I think gives them internally a great deal of confidence that we can play with Alabama. We outplayed Georgia a year ago. We can play with these guys, and I think they actually match up fairly well. You know, they're
great.
Their secondary is outstanding. You touched on, you know, Bryant and Gardner. I mean, two of the top tandem corners on one team in the country. Their safeties are good. You got some toughness to them and what they bring to the table, the linebackers. I love their defensive line. It's undersized, but incredibly quick and twitchy and able to win some one-on-ones, which, by the way, let's not paint Alabama to be the team that they were in Atlanta for the whole year. They had concerns almost every week, whether it was LSU, whether it was Auburn, at times against Tennessee, at times against Arkansas. I mean, that's more who Bama really was all year. And then to their credit, they kind of got backed into a corner. Oh, they're going to lose to Georgia. And it's like, oh, really? And they came out ready to show everybody that, hey, we're better than what you're saying. And they were pissed at the country. With that negativity and that questioning that they can win. But their reality is more of like how they played, you know, all year. So with that being said, I don't know if Cincinnati was going to win this game, but I really think the veteran leadership on this team and Luke Fickell and that staff, I think they'll come up with a plan. And I think, can Ridder create? Can he make plays with his feet? Not always the run, but as you know, against Bama, you get away from 31 and now you got a little bit of time and buy some time and make a throw. Mm-hmm. That's really where you can hurt that secondary. So I don't know, man. I see a competitive game. I really do. I think Bama will probably win it, but I don't think Cincinnati's going to get embarrassed. I think they're going to compete and I think they will.
There are two things for me in this one. One, how does Desmond Ridder begin the game? Mm-hmm. He was shaky in that Indiana game. We've seen him shaky in that stretch, Navy, Tulane, Tulsa. And he wasn't good. I mean, that's the only way to put it. And so can he get Wiley, the tight end, involved? Can he stretch the field a little bit? Because against Alabama, you know this, you can't dig yourself a hole. If you come out and you're not executing at a high level early, it might be too late before you start. And so Desmond Ridder, number one for me, how is he going to come out in this game? Number two, I think the MVP right now is Jerome Ford. He played at Alabama. He knows mm-hmm. what it's like. He knows what Nick Saban's like. He understands what that program's about. To your point, don't lose the game in warmups. Having a guy who's been there and been in the program could help with that during the week. Guys, he's the same as, I'll take Coach Fickell over Nick Saban. You're as good as this guy. You can play with that guy. Maybe having a player who transferred in from Alabama, who knows what it's like to be there. Maybe that helps. But I'll tell you, Cincinnati, we've talked about this a number of times. We talked about it on Selection Day. Cincinnati carries the torch for everybody who said the group of five doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. And I fear that if this turns into a blowout in the second half, I fear that if that happens, that conversation until we get playoff expansion for group of fives going forward is done.
I hope not, because I think it's a case by case basis. You know, I, I don't think Cincinnati, for me, now, I think you're right from a perception standpoint. Maybe they are carrying the flag for the group of five. But for me, it's more of this team. It's Cincinnati playing Alabama. Yeah. You know, they're not playing, I don't know, let's say, you know, Oklahoma or whoever it might be. They're playing Alabama. I mean, they're going to the middle of the ring with a heavyweight champ. And I don't think they would want it any other way. You know, I think this is the team that they probably want to play to be able to show that they can compete. And again, I keep going back to that Georgia game. I think that game gives this team confidence. I think, you know, we talked about Ritter and Ford and those, you know, he's got some talented receivers, which that's how you tack Alabama, by the way, is Ford will make some plays, but if they're going to really win the game, you're going to have to see Alec Pierce make some plays and Tyler Scott and Trey Tucker. And, you know, they've got some guys that can win, and Bama's had some issues on the back end, you know, and that's how you Ritter is going to have to make plays, throwing the football and running to create to throw occasionally on a third and six. If he can get out of there and pick up some yards, great. He'll probably run it, I'm guessing, 12 times, you know, in this game between design, run, and then his ability to get out and create. But the guys that I keep saying are Curtis Brooks and Malik Van. Those guys, I think, and Myjai Sanders, those guys have to be able to make plays and win some one-on-one opportunities. Turn on that Auburn game and watch until the last drive when Bryce Young put it together. Watch their offensive line in that game. Oh. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And Alabama's defense, I thought they were going to be outstanding. They're good, obviously. But how many first-rounders are on that defense? I mean, almost every year you see two, three, four, five, depending on the year. How many, like, without even talking to Todd McShay or Mel Kiper, like, I mean, I know one for sure.
One for sure, right.
But other than that, like, I don't feel like it's your typical off-the-charts – they're just better than everybody they play.
Because you're always getting a pass rusher, a linebacker, and someone in the secondary. Lock for first round. Every level they produce every year.
Yeah. And I mean, I watch them. I think they're good. I think Pete Golding's doing a hell of a job with the group. But I think that if you really look at them, Toe coming over from Tennessee has done a nice job of solidifying the front and gets them right. But Will Anderson is the guy. I like Jordan Battle. You know, I think Helms, now that his ankle is healthy, he's a solid player. Christian Harris is a big athletic linebacker. But, you know, I don't know. I think they're good by Alabama standards, but they're not, good luck.
Right.
Better you than me. It's just not that kind of group. So we'll see. But I think it's a 31-24, 31-27 kind of game. That's what it feels like to me.
I'll take that. And before we move over to Georgia, Michigan, I do want to talk about Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young. And every time we come in to the playoff or these big bowl games, we always talk about the pressure that's on the Heisman Trophy winner, the award circuit, the look what I just did. I've never met him. You know him. You've met him. You've done stories with him. He didn't strike me as that kind of kid. He strikes me as so level-headed and just at peace with everything going on. I don't even know that he knows come kickoff that he won the Heisman Trophy.
I don't think so. You know, I don't think it even is part of it. Very similar to Devontae Smith. Like, I don't even think it's like he's just not an individual guy. He's not an individual accolades guy. It's just his wiring, I think, is more about – he wants to win, you know, he wants to lead this team to championships. And I really think he's been programmed. Like, he came in a certain way, but I think sitting behind Mac Jones and kind of learning the Alabama way, that's what's so impressive to me about Alabama and this run that they've been on now for whatever it is, 13 years since really 08, they climbed the mountain in 09 and won their first with Coach Saban there. But I mean, every year, even if they don't make the playoff, every year we all marvel at Bama. And because I've been kind of behind the curtain a lot with him, the one thing that I always say is it's because his best players police the team and they're the hardest workers. I've always been blown away by how consistent, like, complacency doesn't set in because it's not Nick Saban and his staff like berating these players and telling them they get after them. But it's not like you will respect us. You will respect this program. It's the older players that do that. And it's like the baton gets handed to the next class. And so like Mac Jones last year, Najee Harris and that whole group, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, like Landon Dickerson, they not only won, but they set a standard for how to go about your job. And so what an example through a global pandemic that Bryce Young and these other younger players got a chance to witness firsthand. And these older players, what's cool, if I could talk to any program out there, if you can get your older players when it's not their turn to go and practice to actually be watching like an assistant coach. And then when the younger player comes over, they're like coaching him and talking to him in August, in September, October, November, not just bowl practice. They do it in spring ball. It's just a fascinating way that he's figured out, I'm going to empower each player and I'm going to figure out who has the right wiring to basically be a liaison between me and the players. And he's done it every year, and it's not going to stop as long as he's the head coach. But can other programs duplicate that? I don't know. But that's why Alabama wins, and that's why they're competitive every year, is because he connects to their wiring in such a good way. And going back to your question, I think Bryce Young is all locked in on trying to beat Cincinnati and then trying to get to Indianapolis to take on whoever they might play and do what Mac Jones did, you know, and win a championship.
I love that winner of the next game that Alabama or Cincinnati would play in Georgia and Michigan. This to me is such a good classic football game. I love the uniforms. I love the helmets. I love the history. I love the Jim Harbaugh story. I love the can Georgia get it done. I also think you're the X's and O's guy. So I may be completely off base when I say this, but I look at both of these teams and I believe that they are cut from a very similar cloth. They can run the ball. They can play defense. This game to me has 2017 or just beat you up front. And then whoever makes the biggest play defensively or offensively wins the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think again, emotionally, I think after that layoff, I can't wait to see Georgia. Georgia was the team we put on a pedestal ahead of Alabama for 12 weeks. We just were like, there's Alabama. And then there's everybody else. There's
Georgia, Jordan, but yeah.
And then there's everybody else. And that's where the season was until Atlanta, when Alabama, you know, did what they did. And now Georgia, we haven't seen them since that game, obviously. And now they've sat around together working out and probably recalibrated and probably mad. And so that's the team that's going to take the field when they go out there to take on Michigan. Can't wait to see their state of mind. Because they got to be careful being too wound up, and they got to have like a controlled chaos, especially defensively, because that defense got exposed on the back end. We've been so used to their front getting home that we all wondered all year, how good is their secondary? Because they really haven't been challenged. Alabama's going to challenge them. Bryce Young, Jameson Williams. We knew that before the game, that was going to be a key. And that ended up being the difference in the game, is the back end let them down and the front end didn't get home. So now they get a chance to go up against Michigan. Here comes Michigan. We said earlier, hottest team. How many times did you see 97 just kind of like willing his team? Like, I don't care who they're playing. Like, he had juice, man. And the team fed off of that. And this team has been different all year. I'll never forget watching them play Wisconsin. Place that's been hard for them to win. And it came to the end of the third quarter when jump around usually is loud and crazy and intimidating. And Michigan, which is rare and new for them, they're like, there's video of them like jumping with the Wisconsin students. Like, this is awesome. Like, they were enjoying it. Not like, man, this place is crazy. Like, they were like, this is awesome. And I was like, that's different. Like, little things like that stood out to me. And then watching them from an intangible standpoint, this team was on a mission. They were on a mission to prove everybody wrong, including many of their own fans, going back to August when they were like, I don't know, Jim Harbaugh, is he the guy? I mean, they should fire him. If he loses another, get rid of his ass. Like a majority of the Michigan fans were that way in August. And this team kind of had a, it's us in this locker room against everybody other than our parents. Everybody else is the enemy. And they just got it a little bit better all year. And then they finally really put it together in November when they started to play great football. But they've been on a mission to beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten. What my question is this for you. Was that the mission? Was the mission to beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten? Is that what's been driving them all year? Like when Ohio State last year, when they were like, we're playing Clemson, global pandemic, my ass, we're going after. And they got Clemson, ironically enough. And they beat them soundly. And they weren't the same team a week later in the national championship. Yep. Yep. It may not have mattered. Alabama was so elite offensively. It may not have mattered. But I'm just saying, if you looked at their energy, like they wanted to go out against Clemson with baseball bats. Like they were so mad. They had the score up from the previous year when they thought they had beaten Clemson. And the game was taken away from them on a few calls in their mind. They had that score up all year. They were driven through a global pandemic to beat Clemson, not to beat Alabama. And so my question is, Michigan beat Ohio State, beat Ryan Day, win the Big Ten. Will they still have, like, was that the flag? Or was it, no, that's just one of the steps? Because you can't fake that. Like, what's been driving you? Is it to win the national championship? Is that what drove them? Or was it to beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten? You're going to be able to tell because they fed off of that emotion all year. And I want to see how Aiden Hutchinson and that Michigan team is kind of like an MMA fighter. You want to go to the middle of the ring? This is what I like. This is what I want to do. Let's go. Like they've been like that in a wacky, fun kind of way. Are they going to be like that with Georgia? Or are they going to be more cerebral, you know, more let's out execute them? And not, don't get me wrong, that's been part of it. But the juice has been the difference, in my opinion, on this Michigan team, especially with that defense. So, but, you know, XO-wise, you're right. Yeah, I think both these teams, their wrinkles, their little wrinkle packages they come up with, because if you're defending Georgia, you want to try to bottle up their skill in running the ball, make Stetson Bennett have to throw on third down to beat you, disguise your looks, give him a look pre-snap, go to another look, see if he'll throw it into coverage, which he's been prone to do. And if you're Michigan, you're defending Michigan, it's all about, hey, this is Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum. These guys as a tandem, we cannot let them get going with this offensive line. It's one of the best in the country, if not the top. We got to load up and stop this run game. Michigan knows that. And they've been really good on like jet sweeps and reverses and, you know, halfback pass or whatever it might be. Just some wrinkles to make you pay for being overzealous against their run game. So who does a better job, to your point, on creating those two or three explosives in the pass game or the misdirection, reverse, or whatever it might be, to kind of break some tendencies? Because you're going to have to, you can't just line up if you're Georgia and just run the ball in Michigan. And Michigan can't just line up and say, hey, we're going to run 60 times today against this defense. You're going to have to make some plays in the pass game. And who does a better job of that will probably be the team that wins.
Yeah, because the answer to your question is yes. It all built up from Michigan to Ohio State. That was it. It's something Jim Harbaugh had never done. And it's funny that we look at this matchup because that was the case for Georgia all year. Can you get by Alabama in the SEC championship? It's all well and good what you're doing in the regular season. It's good. It's cute. Your defense is historically good. You're letting up 6.5 points a game. I get it. Great. Awesome. Can you get by Alabama? Because none of this matters until then. So look what happened. Georgia failed their test. They failed their test against Alabama. Michigan passed their test against Ohio State. And then we're dominant in the Big Ten championship game. Mm-hmm. My sense is that now that Michigan got that opportunity, did what everyone said they weren't going to do. I think we would all agree in Michigan, in Harbaugh's time at Michigan, this is probably his most unheralded team. There was no revenge tour. There were no, they weren't even ranked in the preseason. There was nothing. Right. These guys were sleepwalking.
Right.
My sense is that both of them come into this game, one having failed the test, one having passed the test, that Michigan during this layoff is like, well, hell, we're here. Let's go. We accomplished our goal. That was our goal. Now we're in the playoff. Aiden Hutchinson is not going to let anything and say anything otherwise. Hassan Haskins, Blake Corum, they're built up front. That offensive line just won the Joe Moore Award.
Right.
These dudes are going to take a lot of pride in the fact that they've already done everything people said they couldn't do. Let's recalibrate. Let's start this thing over. And let's go prove to people one more time where everything that, they said we wouldn't be.
That's, I'm just telling you, that is hard to do when emotions have been a big part of winning at Penn State, you know, and being kind of in a tight game. And then
Nebraska,
you know, like Nebraska. I mean, they had some close games, but the Ohio State game, the epitome of getting to the top of that mountain. I think this team has bigger aspirations, you know, but you can't fake, you're going to be able to tell in the first few plays of the game, like, of course they're going to be excited to play in a semifinal, but you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
Go back and watch them play all year. I mean, there was just a little bit of an edge to them that is new. You know, they used to at times play almost like not to lose, or it was almost like certain years, it was just a little something holding them back. And this year it was the complete opposite of that. It was like when the game got tight or there was a critical moment, it was like, here we go. This is what we wanted. Not, oh boy, I hope you make a play, or I hope you make a play, or maybe I'll get it. It was like, yes, this is what we wanted. This is what we worked for. And that's special, you know, when you have that. And can't wait to see, you know, the mindset and where they are, because that momentum and that belief was going like, phew,
yep,
like that those last few weeks of the season. And they've got to try to bottle that up. And when they take the field in Miami to take on Georgia, it's more about them, mm-hmm, less about Georgia, less about semifinal national championship. It's more about them, you know, and going out and playing the way they have all year. If they do that, then they got a really, really good shot, you know, to win this game. But so it's fun. I think it's going to be, like I said, we talked there a lot about Michigan, but Georgia, just because imagine how mad they are with the way their season went, and then to get it taken completely away with a humiliating loss. And now they get a second chance at life. So they're going to definitely put their best foot forward. That's what makes, what's going to make this game so good, is both teams have quite a story.
Yeah. And they want another shot at Alabama. That's what they're playing for. Michigan wants us against the world type mentality. Same with Cincinnati, the subplot. And then we'll get into why we love the sport. I think we both just talked about it, but the subplot in Georgia, Michigan, how much do we see of JJ McCarthy? Cade McNamara has been really, really good, but there's always a package for McCarthy. I can't wait to see what they do with him. And then do we see JT at all? Stetson's the guy. But so there's kind of a lingering, there's another quarterback that we might see a package for. We're going to see McCarthy. We always do. It's, do we see JT at any point? I think that's going to be fun during your guys' broadcast to keep that camera on the sideline to see if old JT is warming up, if Stetson comes out and struggles early on.
Yeah, and remember the COVID situation with him, which has kind of been not really addressed and not talked about. There's reports that he didn't show up with the team when they got down to Miami. There's reports that, you know, he's been quarantined. Sounds like he'll be back in time to be able to be at the game. And I don't know. I haven't talked with Kirby. I just know what I've read. Mm-hmm. But how much would that potentially impact his readiness if he's not really practicing and around, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. Under normal conditions, I would say, yeah, you know, let's see, you know, if he turns it over, do they pull the trigger? But in this case, I just wonder, I just wonder if that might prevent them from even having that as an option. I haven't spoken with them yet, so I'm not really sure.
All right, Herb, let's give them what they want. Let's give them a bowl edition of why we love the sport.
That's why we love this sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love this sport.
All right, lead us off, friend. What do you got?
I'm worried about the sport right now. I mean, I love the sport, but I'm concerned about the sport. I'm concerned about the perception of bowl games. You know, I'm concerned, you know, forget about what you and I think. You know, we, I think, are on the opposite end of this new generation of, they're meaningless games or exhibitions. They've been exhibitions our whole lives. You know, but there was pride in playing them. There was pride from the fans, you know, to play in these quote unquote exhibitions. There was pride for the conferences to get to be a Big Ten fan for me growing up in the Big Ten, for you in the Pac-12 back, used to be the Pac-10. To get a chance to play a Big Ten school or an SEC school. And it was like, okay, we've been trying to tell people what kind of ball we play out West here. All right, let's see what's up. You know, there was just the fans kind of became united based on the region. And if you know, as an ASU fan, if the conference went 5-2 and had some big wins, it was like trying to tell everybody, you know, what kind of football we play out here. And the same thing can be true, of course, in the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 and ACC. And so I still enjoy that. You know, I still enjoy the matchups. And I really think the players, despite what you hear, the players, the overwhelming majority of the players still like to play in bowl games. They still enjoy the experience. They still enjoy representing their school and going out and playing. So I'm worried. When I say I'm worried more about the perception of where you hear social media talk. Meanwhile, ratings have never been higher. People watch. People are interested. They love it. They can't get enough of it. But I do hope these players that are growing up in this era, really, they're going to remember these games. You know, they're going to remember their big rivalry games. They're going to remember the games where they're ranked high and their opponents ranked high. They're going to remember the conference championships on the line today. And they're going to remember their bowl games, you know, when they get a chance to go out there and play. So there's still, I know I sound like a guy that may be out of touch, but I feel like it's the opposite. I feel like I'm really dialed in. And I still feel like there are players that you don't hear them speak. There are a lot of guys that still love these moments and still love the competitive aspect of the game. That's why you work 12 months out of the year, is to compete. So while everyone wants to focus on the opt-outs, I still think that 95% of these players are fired up and looking forward to playing it. And so I love the bowl season. I look forward to it and enjoy watching each region have a chance to kind of flex and see who has a great postseason.
Now, it's well said, because you love the sport because you love this time of year, but there is a developing wave of uncertainty with how these games go off. And I've kind of piggybacked on that one with why I love the sport, because for me, this sport symbolizes so many things. One, it gets us kicked off right at the end of summer. You're coming off summer vacation. You're having a good time. We're all jacked up for Labor Day weekend. And I love the sport because it takes me out of summer into fall. And then I love this time of year. The holidays is my favorite time of year because my birthday is December 20th. So it's right around the holiday. Everything.
Happy belated birthday.
Yeah, appreciate that. Everything kind of culminates right now. The end of the season, the New Year's Six games, the Rose Bowl, which I grew up, that's my bowl game. No matter who's in it, I'm a Rose Bowl kid. Yeah. And then the playoff and everything that comes with it. And I love the sport because it ushers in the fall and says goodbye to summer. And then it ushers in a new year. And for me, it's the greatest thing that we do in sports. And so I just love that this is the time of year where we get to say goodbye to a year that, again, has been challenging, say hello to a new one. And what better way to wake up on New Year's Day with all of this stuff to watch? And I wouldn't change it for anything. And I'm with you. I just hope some of these players realize that you might be training for the NFL, but you might be a bust in 3 years, and you're going to look back and be like, damn, I should have played in that Peach Bowl against Michigan State.
Yeah.
Or I should have played in that Peach Bowl against Pitt, you know?
And I love that. That's awesome. And I still think these players got to remember 2% of these guys are actually going to go to the NFL. You know, and sometimes I feel like the perception is 98% are going to the NFL. 2%. And of those two, and of that 2%, less than 1% get that second contract that becomes a game changer in their life for themselves and their families and generations, maybe. Less than 1%. And here we are making all these changes and doing all these things as if they're all going to the NFL. They're all going to be first rounders. It's just not the case. And so, you know, you need to embrace the opportunity that you have, build relationships while you're on these college campuses as a player. Because guess what? If the NFL works out for a few years, great. If you don't even get to the NFL, which the majority of them will not, that time you spend on that campus, the relationships you build on that campus, that's your ticket to life.
Yeah.
That's your opportunity. And if you refuse to take advantage of that, then that's on you. That's not on the system. That's on you. And I feel like the more the rhetoric that they're hearing, the more that they just assume, I'm one of the 1%. I'm definitely going to the NFL, which is cool. Chase that dream. You should, of course, but be careful putting all your eggs into that one basket, because 2% make it. 98% are looking for something to do after they play. And if you don't develop some roots on your campus and get to know people and how they can help you when you're done playing, then you're going to go back home, you know, and not take advantage of the opportunity that you were provided.
It's amazing sport, an amazing time of year, Kirk. Always a pleasure doing this with you. Can't wait for your call with Fowler at the Orange Bowl. It's going to be fun. December 31st, college football playoff, Alabama, Cincinnati, and a Cotton Bowl, and then the nightcap with you guys. Love it, man. Can't wait to see you in Indianapolis. Enjoy the college football playoff, and we'll do this again soon.
And don't forget, after we call that Orange Bowl, we get to fly to Pasadena.
That's right.
The next morning, I'm going to do a three-hour game day that next morning and then call the Rose Bowl, which I wouldn't want to – don't feel sorry. I'm not saying woe is me. Like, I wouldn't want it any other way. I mean, it's a blessing. You said you're a Rose Bowl guy. I'm the exact same way. And what an opportunity. So we're going to have a crazy 48 hours, but it's going to be a lot of fun calling both those games.
Can't wait to watch. Hydrate, drink a coffee. Everything will be good. Thank you for downloading and listening to another edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast.